Health, Science, and Energy Show. Right, Bees? That you, Bo? Right, Bees? Hey, Bees, ain't it, Bo? Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Whoa, boy, Sunday, May 20th. Actually, David Icke's on right now as I record this. He'll be on the show on the 18th of June. We're going to talk to him about extraterrestrials and shape-shifting. That's what our thing's going to be about. Anyway, we had a great time on May 19th, 2007. Dr. Steve Barish was on last night, and boy, was he hot. A lot of listeners. We're getting a lot of listeners at BBS Radio and Tantalk1340AM.com. And Tantalk1340 and 1400 FM, or AM, actually, down there in Tampa Bay. I have a lot of loyal listeners down there. We never leave you guys out. And we got listeners in France and Italy, and oh, my goodness, it's great. Anyhow, this is the last hour of the tape series, so I'm just going to bang on into it right now because we're going to try to get it all in. We might have to put 5 minutes on next week or something, but we're rolling the tape. Had a great show. Randy Masters is coming to the seminar on the 11th of June. He's going to be teaching part of it, bringing a lot of neat inventions and stuff. It's all cool. It's all very cool. Yeah. So we're looking forward to all of this stuff that's about to happen here. And I do hear the spaceship out there. It's not too loud yet, but it will be. Bring that spaceship volume up, baby. Dr. Bell's about to do the last hour of the free seminar series, which normally costs $200 to $400.
What determines where in time you're going to go has to do with the pumping oscillation frequencies of leading up to the critical point where the laser is ignited, and then and once the laser is ignited, how quick you shut down these pumping frequencies of the capacitor plates, because the point of shutdown is at the point in time and space that you're going to be in. So this is just a little introduction into time travel. There's a lot more in detail as to the operation of the vehicle, but these are some of the basic dynamics. And if you go back through, and if you understand anything about capacity and lasers, and if you really put together the pieces of the puzzle that I've put in so far, you should have a fairly good working knowledge of how to construct a time machine, at least by theory. As far as the practical side of it, that always differs. And I can be consulted, or other people I'm sure could be consulted, because we have the hardware specifications due to past efforts that we've made in this direction. About is the propulsion systems that the different types of Pleiadians and Reticulans and other types of races use, the various types of vehicles that we've run into and seen. Now, first of all, the Pleiadians and the Reticulans don't just have one set of propulsion systems. They have multiple sets. In some ships, in some cases, there are up to four different types of propulsion systems that are used in one particular vehicle. And that's why some of these vehicles are limited to interplanetary, inter-Earth, or interplanet type or solar type activity, around the solar system, because of the propulsion systems. They usually have one system that gets the vehicle off the ground. That might be a propulsion type of coil system, like an aluminum coil. I mean, an aluminum disc floating over a electromagnetic field. It has a tendency to produce a hysteresis that causes the aluminum to push itself away and reject both the positive and negative polarities of the magnetic field. Therefore, it becomes a repulsion coil. Some systems use a repulsion type system to get them a couple of feet off the ground, where they can energize some form of electrostatic system to bring them on up higher than that. Lyrians are one group that would do that because they have more of a light beam technology. Then there's other types of systems that use an anti-gravity type system to get them off the ground up into the atmosphere somewhere, where they use a combination of anti-gravity and electrostatics to bring them fairly frictionless through the edge of the planet. And then they use another type of propulsion system that is slightly magnetic in characteristic, which brings them out to the edge of the solar system. And when they get out to the edge of the solar system, then what they do is they use another type of system that that pushes them through into the black holes. It's usually an instantaneous transmission across great vast distances of space and time. The Pleiadians use a three-way system. They use an anti-gravity system, they use an electrostatic system, and they use a hyperdrive system, which is basically the way I explain it is a photographic process. And it's quite effective for them. We have experimented here at Paradigm with different propulsion systems to the degree that our finances and time have allowed us to go. You'll see in one of the slides an 88-foot titanium space vehicle that Jim Villatoso and myself and another group started to put together. But Semyonsi told us to abandon the program at a certain point in time back in the 70s, which we did after spending a huge amount of money on it for a couple of reasons. One, it was the money could have been directed to other areas for a more meaningful purpose, and two, the world was not ready for that technology. So we had to go on. Now the Andromedans have given us their graces to go ahead and step up the technology and to start doing something with it. Again, the Pleiadian way of technology expression was very expensive, meaning that it would have cost at least $40 or $50 million to produce a vehicle that was capable of even interplanetary travel at the rate we were going. The Andromedans have shown us basically how to take the same technology and go down to the local hardware store and express the technology for a far less or greater amount than Pleiadians did, which is kind of a joke in our circles, but they have shown us some technology shortcuts, which eventually, I think now we're wise enough to handle the design of these different crafts, so it will probably happen. Basically, what the Pleiadians do to get the ship off the ground is they create a version of the Seebeck effect, which is a non-polarized magnetic field, and then they pinch it in the quadrants. Once they pinch it in the quadrants, and they move that quadrant in and around the vehicle that they're lifting, and which then makes it not appear to the Earth or whatever planet they're on is to be there. And by using this quadrant pinching system, what happens is they're able to also control the optical frequencies that reach through it, because when you get up onto this kind of, when you start working with gravity, you got to take into consideration that gravity can bend light. And when you're dealing with concentrated gravity, meaning that amounts enough to push a vehicle so fast that the 120th of a frame that you can't even see it on a very good VCR, because it disappears in and out of dimension so quickly, you've got to deal with acceleration forces. But they don't feel the acceleration forces because they're creating multiple forms of gravity, many times that of the Earth, within their own system. So the effect to them is that they're on their own world when they're in their spaceship, and their world has its own gravity. And as the unit accelerates, the gravity accelerates. But when the gravity accelerates, so does the mass. That also includes the mass of the person inside the planet. So theoretically, they can adjust the mass to a particular potential and just accelerate up to that potential without any harm to the people inside the ship. So when you start getting into the anti-gravity systems that they use, basically, when you start to look at it, physically construction-wise, in some of their ships, they use a dual pumping fluid system, meaning they use a colloidal suspended fluids that are pumped through a tube, a duct system, in the outer perimeter of the ship. The one that Jim Dolatoso and I designed, if you look at the photograph, you'll see some pipes in it that go all the way around the ship. And these pipes would have been what we would have used to produce the fluids. What is done is that you put a copper-type solution. This is for the sake of explanation. You would use a copper-type solution and pump it in one direction, and a nickel-type solution and pump it in another, meaning that you would have a copper suspended in a colloidal material that makes it fluid, and the same thing with nickel. Now, if you take a copper and a nickel wire, you'll produce and hook them together and produce a current across the battery. Depending on the polarity of the battery, you can create a hot or a cold a situation, a temperature change around the wire. In the situation that they're using, they're not after a temperature dynamic, they're after a gravity dynamic. So what they end up doing is they end up pumping fluids in one direction of one type of electronic valence. They pump fluids in another direction of another type of electronic valence. And then at certain quadrants in the circle that they're being pumped in, they're not pumped, look at the circle, as two giant garden hoses, say 21 feet in diameter. So you take a 5/8 inch garden hose and you make a circle in it 21 feet in diameter. And then what you would do is take another garden hose, and let's say the first garden hose was a red garden hose that was 21 feet in diameter. Then you would take a green garden hose that's 5/8 inch diameter and lay it right on top of a 21 foot circle. And so you'd have a 21 foot circle of a red hose, you'd have a 21 foot circle of a green hose, each hose being 5/8 of an inch in diameter. Then what you would do in the red hose is you would put the copper solution, and in the green hose you would put the nickel solution. The nickel solution pointing towards the earth, copper solution pointing towards the sky, meaning the red hose is on the top, the green hose is on the bottom. The next thing you would do to get the idea how this would work is you would run around and you would jump. You would start pumping fluids through the hose, and then you would run around and you would jump alternately on the red hose, alternately on the green hose, so that you're pinching off the circulatory flow. This would cause the hose to literally jump or swell from the inertia created by the stopping and starting of the water through the hose. It would create an inertia surge which would cause the hoses to start jumping off the ground if you were to do this. This is a simplified explanation so that you could understand that. The way that the Pleiadians would do it is they would use something to the equivalent of terrestrial people would call a klystron oscillator. Klystron oscillator is a very fast, very high-powered switching device they use in radar sets that switches huge amounts of current at radio frequencies. These klystron oscillators are placed, at varied lengths, spaced out, let's say, one every foot all the way around these garden hoses. We would place one of these klystron oscillators. Inside, what we would connect around the physical hose would be a donut. Just imagine a donut made up of an electromagnetic field. The electromagnetic field being made up of coils wound in opposite directions, so that each klystron would pump a frequency of a positive polarity, and then simultaneously it would reverse its polarity and pump a frequency of a negative polarity, and the positive energy would go into one coil and the negative energy would go into another coil, and these would be wound in a toroid fashion. But the difference between the normal toroid that we would wind, which would be look like a donut with a winding in it, is that the fact that the toroids would have counterposing windings just as a time machine did. So that in the positive mode, the magnetic field would go one way through one set of coils in this donut, and in the negative mode, the energy would reverse itself and go through another set of coils in the same donut, and at a particular point in time, the klystron would create a positive-negative backward-forth oscillation almost simultaneously. And the variation of this speed, or the simultaneous switching time of this one donut, would be synchronized to the next donut. So it would first create for example, donut number one would create a positive field, a negative field. Then next, donut number two would create a positive field and a negative field. Donut number three would create a positive field and a negative field, and so on. As soon as this rhythm, which is donut one, donut two, da, 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 reached the circle, the frequency would increase. It would go da, 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 and then da, 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 and da, 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 and da, 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 to a point when you would have a 7.5 hertz frequency resonance created. Simultaneously, this 7.5 resonating frequency, which is the difference between one donut and another, it's modulating, spacing out, or how quick you would turn one onto the other, would simultaneously be creating a 750 to 1,000 kilohertz frequency field in the overall circle. These donuts, of course, would have the two hoses in their centers. So you'd imagine now the hoses in positive and negative directions with the donuts spaced 1 foot apart around a 21-foot circle, and this frequency starting out at a low frequency and working up into a high frequency in the form of a klystron tube as it comes to modulation. This would then create the proper fields that would allow the vehicle to create gravity waves. And I think I've given away way more at this point in this explanation than is necessary. But the main thing is to get the concept across. This, of course, gets the vehicle off the ground. Now, the next thing that happens is the fluids themselves, which are working as a colloidal substance, creating alternate forms of valence reactions and different kinds of magnetic reactions in the system, are not in metal tubes. They're more or less in a plastic, what you would call a plastic tube. Actually, it's an organic material that's growing under vibratory frequencies and then hardened by resins at the point that it's harvested on ERA, which I explained to you earlier in the tapes when we talked about horticulture. But anyway, these tubes are electronically isolated from one another by a high dielectric field material, meaning like they could almost consider the dielectric resistance of that of mylar, which we talked about voltage amplification. Because there is a voltage amplification between the two frictional surfaces, you create a very large static charge. You'll get a positive charge across the copper and a negative charge across the nickel. So what happens is this positive charge is then relayed to the outer surface or the skin of the ship, which has a metallized surface on it that responds to static charges, so that you end up with a positive potential on the bottom and a negative potential on the top if the ship is lifting up. This gives an electrostatic effect of a very high magnitude of the ship, which creates a negative ionizing effect in the areas around the ship. When this happens, it further amplifies the thrusting ability of the anti-gravity type engines, which we previously covered. And then what happens is it allows the vehicle to move effortlessly and frictionlessly through the Earth's atmospheres, because what you've created here is an electronic airfoil. As the electronic airfoil increases in its speed, so does the ship. And so as a result, everything working in a harmonic level, the ship can move very quickly and accelerate very quickly out to the outer edges of the Earth's atmosphere. When it gets out in the outer edges of the Earth's atmosphere, another type of propulsion system is engaged in, which I'm not at liberty to talk about right now, but it brings it out to the edge of the solar system. Once it reaches the edge of the solar system, what happens then is we engage what's called the hyperspace drive. Now, the hyperspace drive is a type of propulsion system that basically takes a picture of where it is, projects the picture down into the center of the ship, has a separate projector inside the ship that has what you would call a photograph of the edge of the picture that it's receiving, and then retakes the photograph over again and projects the edge back into the center of the photograph. So what happens is it's basically taking a picture of where it is, has available a picture of where it wants to be, and simultaneously transposes the picture. And the lens system on the ship goes from a collecting series of lenses to a projecting series of lenses in the process. And as the projected image reaches its fulfillment on energy fields, the entire ship is then transported at that moment across space and time to whatever the picture or wherever its destination or point is. So what we're saying is it takes maybe 5 or 6 or 7 hours to get out to the edge of the solar system, and it takes about less than a second to transpose itself across space and time into the Pleiades, 500 light years from here. Now, obviously, what's real important when you have a system like this is that you have to have a good working optical system, and you have to have a good mapping system, meaning that you have to have a good set of pictures of where you want to be. Because if you don't have a good set of pictures of where you want to be, and you project a picture in that doesn't make any sense or is slightly off in its energy-wise, latitude and longitudinally, as far as its inner and outer vibrations, you end up getting lost in space. And this is precisely what happened to a lot of Pleiadians. As the crews get older, they go out to the edge of the furthermost map point of space and time, and then they insert a computer-enhanced image of what they think they want to see in the next point of existence that they're going to project themselves to. Now, obviously, this technology in the very beginning would have taken a lot of bravery, because If you didn't have a picture for your first point of your first destination point, and realize that, let's say that you haven't gone anywhere yet, yet you've got a hyperdrive system here that's capable of going somewhere. Somebody's got to get out there and take that first picture, and then make all the successive photographic frames are necessary to come from the place that you want to go to, back to where you are. And so this is precisely what happened in the Pleiades. Because a lot of their stars, they have 250 some odd stars in that particular constellation, they had to, luckily they had stars that were within a light year or so apart. As a matter of fact, on Era, when you stand on the surface of the planet, you'll see a very bright star, which is the main sun, Taygeta, and you'll see a secondary sun, which is Alcone, which is a lot dimmer, it's much dimmer. So you're able to see both stars simultaneously, but it looks like a bright sun and a dim sun. You know, a very dim one. But because of this, obviously they use conventional means to get around. They could use an ion system like we're working on. There's a lot of different types of propulsion systems that within a few months' time you could get out to a nearby star, making all the energy photographs that are necessary to create an entire photographic map of energies to program into your computer to make this jump possible in the first place. Now, when we start looking at the parts, the actual integrated parts of the spaceship or the projection system, we end up looking at, and if you look at the model that I built that represents the ship, you'll see the X1 healing machine firmly secured on a round central chamber in the center of the ship engine, which is in the video part. What the X1 healing system part does is it is the projector that generates the necessary energies to construct a photograph from a DNA generic level in the center of the spaceship, meaning that this photograph is not just a picture that you would take with a Polaroid camera of the galaxy, of where you want to be. This is a photograph that's so complete that it even has information of the individual cellular nuclear membranes or the nucleus of the cells in that solar system, meaning it has the DNA vibratory frequency characteristics of its particular destination ingrained in the photograph. And the only kind of projector that's capable of reproducing that photograph as an image, a four-dimensional holographic image, is what's projected in the center of the ship engine, is the X1 healing machine. Because when you use the X1 healing machine, which we have talked about earlier, and we talk about its ability to reconstruct, you know, sick cells or reconstruct healthy cells and replace them in the body with sick cells, which then allows the body to heal itself. What we were saying is that if you can construct a cellular rejuvenating machine with that same technology, you can create a galactic cellular rejuvenating spaceship, because the same technology is required to reproduce a cell in the body as is required to reproduce a picture that would depict a particular point of origin of the photographer in the landscape or whatever, or a destination in the galaxy. Now, when you start getting deeper into this technology, it actually starts to get simple once you learn the basic things. The way I learned it, first of all, I mean, and I'm just a student of it, I studied the human body to a point where I understood how a cell reproduces, and I think through this tape series, if you go back to the different multidimensional facets, where I talked about from the meditation point of getting in touch with the Father to the point where we are now, and you review this a few times, you'll have a very clear, coherent picture of what we're talking about now. Now, there are different components in the engine that are of quite a bit of interest to most people. One component system is the gathering lens, the capture lens. These are lenses that are up on the top of the vehicle. Now, the spaceship that you see, the Variation 3 ship that's oftentimes available, you'll see it in some of our literature, you'll see it on the cover of this tape series. That huge thing on the top is a multifaceted gather lens. On the Pyridine model that you see in the tape series, it has a gather lens on the top and the bottom of the vehicle, because our technology is not as sophisticated where we can put the entire up right side of the top lens and the bottom lens. In other words, what does the landscape look like around the ship from the top, and what does the landscape look like around the ship from the bottom for the initial data gathering base that's necessary to send this down into the center of the ship where the data is reconverted into the present set of coordinates of where it wants to arrive at. So because we don't have the technology to do this as the way they do it, we have to use two sets of lens and two sets of column systems, where on the Pleiadian ship they only use one set. It's on the top, on the big beam ships. And that's exactly why they call them beam ships, by the way, because they're working on light beams and beams of energy. Once the energy is collected from the gather lens and the capture lens on the top of the ship, it is sent down into the center of the ship. And as it goes down through the center of the ship, it goes down a thing called the cancel column, which is the pipe, or the pipe that you see. You saw it in the big ship that Jim and I are working on. There's a big pipe right down through the center, and there's one on the model. That's the cancel column, meaning that it's canceling all of the energies from the photograph and reducing them down to an energy field that it can analyze in its computerized systems. As it is canceled in the cancel column, there are coils or electromagnetic coils that are the same as in the outer parameter of the ship that got it off the ground in the first place, meaning a caduceus wound coil. And they're the same as we talked about being in the center of the time machine. So obviously then the vehicle has time travel capabilities, and in this case of course it does, because when you play around with these photographs, as we're playing around with them, the whole system of creating the Mobius pattern has been created in the time machine is also created in the periphery of the ship. It's done in a different manner, which I'm not really seeing on this tape series, but if you understand the time machine and you reflect back on the time machine, what we talked about it earlier, you'll realize, you know, where I'm coming from and what that's about. The ships are not that complicated if you take them component by component, system by system. If you try to project into their inner workings from a layman's point of view with no outside knowledge, they look incredibly complicated, but they really aren't. Next, if you look at the there's a bunch of little smaller tubes in the model that we show. There's several little tubes coming out of this assembly in the top, coming down to the center of the ship, and there's several little tubes coming out of the bottom lens assembly going into the center of the ship. So you'll see two sets of smaller tubes going in from the top to the bottom, from the top and the bottom going into the center. These little sets of tubes are what's called the spider optics. The purpose of the spider optics is to balance the projection network. Even though the main projection beam is done at the top of the ship, the spider optics are stabilizing and balancing the energy fields on a 360-degree periphery around the entire circumference of the ship. And the best way I would say to explain this is, if you were to go to Disneyland and go to the AT&T booth, where they have you stand in the middle of a room which has a semicircle ceiling on it. It's like you're standing inside of a half sphere. And while you're standing inside this half sphere, there's railings there, and they show you a picture. Like if you're inside of a helicopter, you can see, if you look towards the front of the screen, you can look towards the front of where you're going. If you look, turn around and face the back of the screen, which is behind you, you can see where you've been. And you look around, it gives you the effect of being actually in a helicopter from a 360-degree view of a half circle or a half of the sphere. It doesn't give you, of course, where you're standing is missing. That part's missing. But they could easily take a set of lenses and have you stand on a plexiglass floor and give you a 360-degree panoramic view if they wanted to, by increasing the theater capability. Of course, even showing you a half a circle of a panoramic view as you move through a helicopter, people have to hold on to the railings to keep from falling over. The same thing is true with a Pleiadian ship. It has to project, it has to receive the picture with that degree of accuracy. So what these spider optics do is they are additional lenses that are projected through the side of the ship that help balance the electro-optic energies that are coming into the center of the ship, which are being pushed down through the cancel column. And you'll notice where they originate. They all originate at the top set of lenses at the bottom. They don't go directly into the cancel column. So they have to be processed, but they are additional eyes for the top, and they're additional eyes for the bottom. On the Variation 3 ship, you'll see large louvers around the center of the parameter of the ship. What these louvers are multiple fiber optical systems, meaning that they're not just one round pipe like we're showing you on the model. There are many, many, many bundles that are shaped in a rectangular fashion that move from the center of the ship to the top and the center of the ship to the bottom. It's a highly focused lens system, but the technology on Earth today is quite capable of creating that particular optic system so that the entire ship can be operated. Now, in the projection mode, for example, in some of the Meyer footage you'll see on the big beam ship, in the Meyer Chronicles, for example, tape, you'll see on the beam ship, you'll see the Variation 3 ship with a beam coming out of the top, a beam coming off the very bottom, and a beam coming out of the center. And if you watch the ship, whichever direction that it goes, that beam always projects first and the ship follows. If it's going to the right, then the gondola on the top swings to the right. The middle of the center of the ship emits a red light, the top emits a red light in the direction it's going to go, and the bottom ring emits a red light in the direction it's going to go. If it's going to go the other way, this light beam swings around on the ship, and the ship then goes in the other way. This is the optic follow system that the Pleiadians use, where they are using a semi-interdimensional action of the ship as a force field to protect themselves, at the same time to make navigation smoother. They are not engaging completely the projection optical system that allows them to go into hyperdrive, because to engage a system within the planetary confines is to do great damage to the planet itself. Because it creates an astral vortex that allows huge amounts of negative energy to filter down into the planetary surfaces. This is, of course, how the Greys got here in the first place, because other extraterrestrials, when they came here with their propulsion techniques, did not acknowledge the Earth's space as they should have, used their hyperdrive systems too close to the Earth's gravitational field, and created great rents in the veil around the Earth between the different dimensions. And this allows a lot of what we call astral vampiral energy to escape into the Earth's three-dimensional system. A good example of that, of course, I could give, that's a natural phenomenon here on the Earth, is the Bermuda Triangle. Under certain, during the times of the Dark Lords of Atlantis, if you remember correctly, which they were undermined by the Greys even then, what happened was the Dark Lords began to work with these interdimensional forces, and they got out of control, which led to their destruction of Atlantis, Poseidon, about 12,497 B.C., actually 495 B.C. Atlantis, the Poseidon capital of, was located right off the coast of Miami, Florida, about 2 or 3 miles. When Poseidon sunk below the waters of the sea, of the Atlantic, during that time frame, it left this huge negative vortex, because they were using this technology we just discussed right on the surface of the planet for evil purposes.
This seminar series is continued on the other side.
Well, that's pretty good stuff there, I think. We're having a good day today at Paradyne. It's Sunday, May 20th. That's the last half hour. There's one more 30-minute section where we're going to cover propulsion systems. And what I want to do now, because it's actually a live Dr. Fred here on May 20th, 2007, the X1 healing machine, which I constantly refer to in the tape series there, the seminar thing that we're just doing there, the X1 is coming out fairly, we're working on it now again, and it's been something I've been playing around with for years. The reason it hasn't been produced and put out to the people primarily is because I haven't had the time to put it together. It's not a problem of R&D or anything like that. It's just a matter of timing. There's so many things that go on here at Paradyne, and at BBS Radio, of course, takes a lot of my time now, getting new guests, keeping avant-garde with what's going on. When we have, for example, David Icke on in August, we're going to be talking about shape-shifting propulsion systems, government cover-ups, websites going down. For example, that French website, the French government just recently, about a week ago, released all their stuff from 1926, I believe, to the present, all the government findings on UFOs, the police reports, the civilian reports, the military reports, everything. And that website went down in about 3 days. So guess who took that puppy apart? You can guess on that one. Same thing happened with the Brazilian one. When the Brazilian one was released about 6-8 months ago, the Brazilian government also decided to release their information to the internet. It was also taken down and censored. So not by the Brazilian government, but by ours, obviously. So we're running up on a really interesting time here in space with what we're doing. But the X1 healing machine, primarily, as I explained how it worked on the propulsion system, on the human system, it's the same way. In other words, we see things through our eyes, we look at things, and we perceive them on our brain, and it's all an identity thing. For example, when you're a child, and some of this is covered in the early part of the tape series, when you're a child, a lot of objects you don't recognize because you've been, you've reincarnated from another time. For example, when I reincarnated, the time before me was only a few years previous, so I could identify pretty easily. But some children are not here maybe for 1,000 years. So when they were here last walking the earth, they didn't see cars. They saw horse carriages. Now they see horseless carriages, sort of like something out of the Twilight Zone. But the X1, what it does is it works when you photograph and read. There's several ways of reading the human aura. And what we do is we put you in front of a screen, and that screen puts out a non-threatening visual color radiation of different colors, red, green, blue, and all the colors in between, or violet, red, green, violet. In other words, from about 650 nanometers down to about 402 nanometers, which is the spectrum. And one version of it, you have your hand on a Corellian camera, and we can do a complete analysis of what is going on in your system when the red light comes on the screen. The screen turns red, and your hand is in the Corellian photography. Remember this, how does red ground out through your body? It's just a grounding operation. That's the way Corellian photography works. So what happens is you also hear the musical note A, which also coincides with the willpower. It's a driving note. It's the top of the scale. So hearing the music note A, looking at the color red, how does your body handle that? You might think you're seeing orange. So obviously then there's a phase shift. So that immediately takes us to the four main atoms in the body: oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. And as I've said many, many times before, the carbon atom is the atom that links the body to the other four atoms. In other words, it creates all the cells in the body. So what happens is it is an organizer. The nitrogen atom helps produce protein. The oxygen is an animator. It allows the prana, the life force in the system, the vitality globule, if you're metaphysical. And, of course, the hydrogen atom is the atom of consciousness. When we work with colors and sounds, we're always working with a hydrogen atom. The bandwidth of the human hearing, the bandwidth of the human vision is limited to the frequency or the bandwidth or the spectral spread of the hydrogen atom. So having that in mind, when we put our hand on a Corellian plate and we put high voltage to the plate, not on your hand, there's a piece of photographic film insulating you, and a piece of glass, obviously, insulating you from the high voltage side of it. But what happens is your hand wants to conduct. Your hand wants to get the electricity wants to shock you, basically. And in the process of shocking you, it's going in you, but it can't because you're isolated by this plate. So then what happens is that your body, if you are going to be, electrocuted by lightning, for example, it would be the fact that you're standing on the ground, lightning hits you, and you conduct electricity to the ground. Now, if, for example, you're wearing a pair of galoshes or very heavy insulated rain boots and a lightning hits you, you might not get killed because you're now insulated from ground. And if you're standing on a rubber mattress or something or a rubber mat and get hit by lightning, yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to be a lot of current there, but you're not going to conduct it to ground because lightning, remember, is on its way to the ground, not you. You just happen to get in the way. You are a conduit of ground. So with that in mind, what we do is with Corellian photography, we start to photograph your energy going to ground. And if you have blockages in your central nervous system, then you obviously are not, your body does not have good conductivity, which means your electricity is not circulating properly in your body. You're going to start showing a lack of ground. And by looking at the acupuncture points and acupressure points on the human hand, we can look at every single grounding apparatus in the human body. It's a map of the entire body. So what we're doing with the hand is we're rounding you out. Now, on top of taking the Krillian photo while you're looking at the screen, you're also hearing sound. So you're getting a dual sensory perception input on your grounding mechanisms on your body. And it also tells us how you interpret life, how you interpret energy, how you assimilate vitamins and minerals, how do you assimilate food. Is your assimilation even working? Is it not working? How are your kidneys? How are they functioning? Are you detoxing? Are you taking out the toxic things of your body? All this shows up on Krillian photography. So, that said, with the X1 healing machine, when it's fully engaged, it will look at all of these vibratory frequencies and it will record into a central computer what the deviations are, what you perceive, because it's your deviation is what your hand says, and the computer is also looking at what the screen says. And when the screen says something to you and your hand says something else, we know there's a deviation, a frequency or a phase shift in the hydrogen atom. So what we do then is, when we're finished, we put the correct frequencies up on the screen again, and now you get a much harder blast of those colors and sounds, and so it will actually correct your frequency response and make it, it'll normalize it to that point in that time of day. Now realize, once you're off the influence of the machine, you're now under the terrestrial influence of the surrounding universe, meaning the sun, the moon, where's the tide at today, what's the moon's, moon's gravity frequencies or pull, the solar flares, the solar energy, all of these things now come back into play. When this happens, then your body, your cellular structure of hydrogen now is back into the rhythm of the circadian rhythm, I should say, of the universe, and not the X1 healing machine. So, but it now has had a correction. Another example of that is if you're flying a ship, going for a ride in a boat, and you're navigating with a compass. On any compass is a small magnet that turns along the side of the compass, and it actually influences the way the pointer points to north. So if there's a piece of metal in the ship or some magnetic interference in the ship that causes the compass without any magnet on it to go the wrong direction or slightly off, this little compensating magnet then aligns the compass, compensating for the magnetic anomalies of the ship. So that's what the X1 healing machine is. It's aligning your magnetic frequencies to the earth, to yourself, and it's not compensating for anything. So that's why when you put that mechanism into a Pleiadian beam ship, and you start to turn that on, and you start to operate that, the X1 healing machine, because it has the ability to forcibly generate these energies of the human cell, well, the human cell is nothing more than a representation of the entire hologram of the Earth and the universe. So basically, once again, it becomes a holographic projection system. And so obviously with the X1 healing machine, we are obviously incorporating the Andromedan technology, the hologram projectors, into the screens themselves. They're not actually being there when you're getting tested, but once the testing process or the evaluation process is over, then these things swing into place and they electromagnetically and holographically start to work on the DNA of the body too. So there's a lot of other systems that go into play. So the X1 basically is a healing system. It's just not a healing machine. A lot of people don't really understand it. Now, this weekend we had the Sound Healing Conference. It was really great. Spent a lot of time with Bob Hoover, who I mentioned on my show last night, who invented all of the synthesizers that we see around, a lot of the circuitry for that. He was another Bob Moog type person. Randy Masters will be coming to the seminar and co-conducting it along with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, a medical doctor. And so she's going to bring her. She was there last year, and she's got a whole another year of things to report in on how the holographic projector technology is progressing on the medical side of things. So that's going to be really exciting. Randy Masters is going to come down. He works a lot with the hydrogen atom. He will bring all kinds of tuning forks that once you bang these things, you bump them and they start resonating. You shock them, in other words, and they have tremendous healing effect on the body. So you actually get to hear and see sound healing, which is part of the X1. Sound healing is very important. And, of course, he's going to bring these wind chimes. He's even got these new really exotic wind chimes that he designed. And we're going to be playing with those along with the rest of the Paradigm systems. And, of course, on Saturday night, we're going to have a big laser light show for everybody. And sometimes we have so many people here, we have to have two laser light shows in two different, you know, we have laser light show one, laser light show two, because we can't get all the people in the living room. Or there's you could be overcrowded, then the system bogs down, and the Stargate's not going to work. Now, the Stargate is something else, and some people will be experiencing the Stargate. This is all going to happen on June 9th, 10th, and 11th at the Aliso Creek Inn in Laguna Beach. And the Aliso Creek Inn in itself is a really wondrous place. It's in the center of an extinct volcano. So when you're inside of it, it's like being at Diamond Head in Hawaii. You think you're in Hawaii. It's got the trees. It's got a golf course in there. All this inside a huge volcano. And there's a river running through the center of it, which goes right out to the ocean. So when you follow the river for about an eighth of a mile, you walk right out on this beautiful ocean. So you can go out on the ocean, break time, and take a walk in the waves. It's really quite an environment for doing a healing workshop and seminar. Also, I will probably be playing music at this seminar because we're getting back into the music scene again. So we'll be setting up with Pleiadian sounds, which a lot of you out there have never heard. So this is going to be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to having everybody there and enjoying everything. And if you want to book the seminar, you can email Mikkel, M-I-K-E-L-L-E, at Pyradyne, P-Y-R-A-D-Y-N-E.com, or you can go to the Pyradyne.com website, or on this website that you're listening to now, BBSRadio.com, has information on the seminar. However, the information on the seminar that's on all these websites is not current. It's just part of what we're going to do. Because these seminars have their own life, and we always get at the last minute some really famous speakers to come in and presenters, and so they get to do their thing along with me, and it's a lot of fun. We always have surprise guests. We have a little Qigong breathing exercise, which is a lot of fun, from my martial arts teacher, Michael Epstein, who I've been studying under for 20 years. We have a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of new people, and it's kind of like an experience. A lot of people come out here and spend their vacations with us. They'll bring their kids, and even the kids will come sometimes, but they don't bother the seminar. They're just there, and they have fun. And also, staying at the Aliso Creek Inn for less than $150 a night, you can have a full-blown suite that has a kitchen, a stove, a microwave, which I don't really like microwaves, but it's there, and an oven in some of the rooms, and gas heat, you know, gas, and they have televisions and, you know, cable, and huge beds. It's like a little apartment for $150 a night, $160. We get a special rate. Normally in this town, something like that would be $500 and up. But because we've done this seminar for so many years at the Aliso Creek Inn, they give us very, very special consideration. Also included there is a golf course if you want to play golf. And we also have a nice restaurant there. So you can have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, right at the restaurant, which is right in the compound there. And the actual place has got several acres large. It's a very big place. And there's a pro shop, and there's all kinds of cool things going on. And, of course, we got our late show on Saturday night. So we look forward to seeing everybody at Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Seminar. And next week we're going to do the last half hour of this tape series. We're going to finish up on the Pleiadian propulsion systems. We'll probably cover those at the seminar a little bit in a different light. I have a nice little computerized show that we do. And so, with that said, this is. And by the way, Steve Barris was amazing last night. He was doing planetary healings on the air. People were feeling it all over the world and calling in. Shows are getting much bigger at BBS Radio now. As a matter of fact, today with David Icahn, we have full capacity of the internet is totally maxed out. We couldn't handle another listener. There's so many. So everything is growing. Saturday night, Randy Masters, the person that I mentioned earlier, will be on. And with that, I bid you a good rest of the weekend. I realize it's Sunday night, May 20th, 2007. And tomorrow, of course, for some of you, you'll be getting up and probably going to work and not enjoying it. And a lot of you will be enjoying your work or whatever you do during the day. If you're not enjoying it, get yourself a pyramid and go space out for a few hours while you're at work. Wear your pyramid at work. It will really sensationalize your job. So once again, thank you for listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. at BBS Radio. Remember, if it's mainstream, it won't be here. It's everything else on BBS. Talk to you soon. Bye. Saturday night is a coming to new show.